Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
This is Dr. Jennifer Daniels, and you're listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul channel at BlakeRadio.com. Please visit VitalityCapsules.com and get your free gift, which is my special report, Remedies So Powerful They Could Make Antibiotics Obsolete. And actually, these are remedies I actually did use in my medical practice, and I ended up not needing to prescribe antibiotics, so they really are very powerful. And that's at VitalityCapsules.com. And as always, I welcome your calls and questions, so please call in at 914-338-0695. Now, tonight's topic is when healing diets harm and how to turn it around. There are lots of healing diets out there, and being an extreme dieter myself, I've tried most all of them. And also, as a doctor who often would recommend diets, I felt try them out so I get the kinks out, realize where the rough spots were, and could really advise a person that, hey, you know what, this might not be the diet for you, or if you're going to go for this diet, here's a few things that you might want to watch out for. And so the healing diets I'm going to talk about today are the vegetarian diet, vegan diet, macrobiotic diet, raw vegan diet, fruitarian diet, and some people actually do a raw diet with meat. That's an interesting combination, but that's one that's out there. And so, as I said, I've lived them all and helped people heal with all of it, except raw meat. I did not eat raw meat. So today I'm going to focus on my observations and conclusions. And you're really not going to find this anyplace else, because a lot of places or individuals talk about diets, they talk about it from a place where maybe they've tried it and they can tell you their experience. Or maybe they've read all the research written on the subject or something like that. A lot of research that's published is incredibly biased. And, you know, getting published is challenging. And often in order to get published, you have to espouse certain views. So any discussion based on other people's research is definitely limited. So what I'm going to tell you is based on my observations with my patients, observations with myself, families, and other, you know, individuals. It's really practical stuff. But first, I want to say what is not a healing diet. Standard American diet, where you walk into the grocery store and purchase the package whose marketing message aligns with your self-image, is not a healing diet. An example of this would be a family where the children eat Cocoa Pebbles, the teenage son eats Wheaties, parents eat Cheerios, and grandma eats Raisin Bran. Okay, so that's not a healing diet. But that is what we call the default setting. So what we're talking about today is diets that have a better healing outcome than the default setting. So the default setting is basically shopping at a grocery store and pretty much picking up whatever looks good. All right, so what is a healing diet? A diet is a diet that's pursued in order to achieve better health. This is an important concept. So we're not talking weight loss, although you can expect to lose weight. if that's one of your goals. But primarily a healing diet. So a person who's very happy with the status quo, in other words, with their present health, should not attempt a healing diet for many reasons. One, it's too inconvenient. And two, there's so many hazards, which I'm going to talk about today, that if you are already feeling really good, I mean very good, and you're happy with your energy level and everything else and your health and your stuff, and there's really no reason to attempt a healing diet, because what has happened is the big guys have muscled in, so to speak, and so many healing diets, a lot of the foods that are presented as healing actually are not, and we're going to touch on that today. So as an example, I have a friend who takes antidepressants for depression, alcohol to relax, a pill for sleep, a pill for erectile dysfunction, and gets periodic laser eye surgery to stave off blindness. Now, I suggested to this person that making a dietary change for health purposes would be a good idea. And this person said to me, I am perfectly healthy and happy with my diet. Now, this is the kind of person who should not make any attempt to follow a healthy diet. It would be too big a strain on the happiness. So you should not pursue a healing diet and become unhappy. So that doesn't work either. So motivation is necessary. And fortunately, there's a lot of motivation to go around. That's why you're tuned in. And we're going to talk about how to get it right and how it could go wrong. So I'm not going to talk about the Atkins diet, because even Atkins himself said, this is not a healthy diet. It's just a weight loss diet. So we're not going to discuss that, even though I actually did follow the Atkins diet in my youth. So the first diet we're going to talk about is the vegetarian diet. Now, vegetarian, this means a person eats no animal flesh, but may eat eggs or dairy, which are considered animal products. So the animal can give up the egg without having to drop dead, and the animal can give the milk without dropping dead. So this is actually a pretty good transition from what's called the omnivore diet, which is a euphemism, I believe, for the standard American diet. So a vegetarian diet is very helpful in that it lessens the chemicals coming into your body, because meat is raised with quite a few chemical inputs. Especially nowadays, the animals are fed genetically modified feed, which is grown with pesticides and herbicides, and then when the animal eats this basic feed, the animal super concentrates these chemicals and you get a really high dose of it. The next thing that happens with the animals is they're fed a considerable amount of hormones and other and antibiotics to modify their behavior and the economic yield or profit that's received when they're sold. So all these things, just by eliminating meat from your diet, you tremendously reduce your exposure. And this is a major source of the health benefits. So the other thing about the basic vegetarian diet is it's more simplified. The food is easier to digest than the basic meat and potatoes type diet. Now, what is the problem? There's a couple of problems that naturally occur and then a couple of problems that are kind of built in for the unwary individual. First problem is dieter may increase the amount of dairy intake in order to compensate for the perceived lack of calories. And when I first became vegetarian, this happened, not of my own volition, actually. I was pregnant at the time, and I went to my doctor, and I said, look, as long as you know straight up, I'm vegetarian, I'm not eating any meat, let's move forward from there. So my helpful doctor said, well, eat lots and lots of dairy. Well, thank God I survived the pregnancy. But that's not a healthy move in terms of a plain old vegetarian diet. If you switch from your regular diet to a vegetarian diet, minimum, you should at least not increase your dairy intake. You may even want to reduce it. And you may want to go a step further if you're going to eat dairy and attempt to eat organic. There have been scandals concerning products labeled organic milk or organic dairy that actually were not. So if you're going to eat dairy in your vegetarian diet, you need to buddy up with a farmer and say, hey, you know, I really want some stuff that hasn't got the poisons in it. Can you do that for me? And usually he'll be pretty honest with you. So, well, you know, yeah, I can, or no, I can't. But you definitely want to get dairy that's free of chemicals if that's what you're going to eat. The next stumbling block with a plain vegetarian diet is many people eat fake meat or meat substitutes. And they're all, and this is extremely, extremely, extremely bad, because the meat substitutes are made, a lot of them, with gluten, and gluten will really give you just a whole host of health problems. So meat substitutes or fake meat is a serious no-no if your reason for being vegetarian is being healthier. Now, if you're trying to save the animals, no problem. Knock yourself out. But if you're trying to improve your personal health and you're pursuing a vegetarian diet to that end, then you need to really let go of the fake meat. And I would even go so far as to say, if you really feel you need fake meat, then you should eat the real meat in lesser quantities until you feel comfortable letting go of the meat totally and completely. The next stumbling block is many people who go vegetarian will increase the amount of white flour products. That would be crackers and muffins and bread, to give themselves kind of a filled up feeling. And some people have gone so far as to have what's referred to as a vegetarian diet devoid of vegetables. And this is a diet that's nothing but meat substitutes and breads. And this is absolutely devastating. This creates mood swings, bad skin, aches and pains, allergies. And really, in my observation, totally eliminates the benefit of omitting meat. And I would say definitely, if you're going to do it that way, welcome to the Why Bother Club, because it's really, you know, you're not benefiting yourself by substituting white flour products and synthetic meat products for your meat. You're better off eating the meat and possibly, I say, cleaning up your act. Cleaning up your act would mean eating meat that has been raised without chemicals. That would be your better transition point. But definitely, vegetarian diet, the big downfall is the fake meats and substituting the breads. Now, next is the macrobiotic diet. This is an absolutely fascinating diet. It's really actually my favorite from an academic point of view, but the story is this. There's this Dr. Michio Kushi, who came to the United States from Japan. He noticed all this sickness among the citizens here in the United States. And he took a look at this and said, oh, my gosh, if only they would get their nutrients from whole foods, then that would solve the problem. Hence the term macro. Macro means large, or like the whole thing. Biotic means life or food. So the diet is filled with basically whole foods and different foods, of course, Japanese foods, that would be healthy or healing. Now, way back when, in the early days, macrobiotic people had to rely on imported foods, foods imported from Japan. Over time, what happened was farmers in the United States started growing the various macrobiotic foods, the brown rice, the short grain, the long grain, the different types of barley, all the different things that you need for the macrobiotic diet started being produced here in the United States. Now, the diet relies on the premise that every food has some yin and some yang, and you need yin-yang balance. So in other words, you need some high yin foods, some high yang foods, low yin, low yang, and it balances it out. And of course, there's no meat in this diet, and it's on the premise that meat is too yang, too strong a yang force, and throws the body off balance. Now, the neat thing about this diet is it has its own natural built-in probiotics. So your fermented miso is your source of good bacteria. And unfortunately, they believe in one bowel movement a day. That is it. One, that's all you get, one bowel movement a day. And this has created problems, which we'll talk about later. But it also contains wheat, wheat noodles. They have wheat noodles in the diet, and they have wheat products. And they do allow a sweetener called brown rice syrup. And if you've ever tasted brown rice syrup, it tastes a lot like, well, syrup. These are all part of the diet. And many adherents took this to the extreme. In other words, they would eat a lot of wheat and a lot of syrup. I was all ready to sign up for macrobiotic. Like, man, this is great. I'm going to really go for this. Maybe go take some courses and really just drill down on this. And one of my patients who had cured her cancer with macrobiotics came to my office very upset because her cancer came back. So my attitude was, no problem. Cancer came back. Let's go back to the Macrobiotic Institute and get a reboot. Well, then she confessed that she was meticulous with her macrobiotic diet. And I said, oh, my God, now what are you going to do? She says, I don't know, but I'll find out. So she really went on a quest, and she discovered the raw food diet, which she adopted, and her cancer went away. So let's talk about what went wrong with the macrobiotic diet first. First of all, I believe her when she tells me that she meticulously followed this diet, because this was a very determined lady, and she even had her kitchen renovated and totally redone to follow whatever diet it was she was doing. So what happened was, I believe, once the foods were grown in the United States, they were grown on soil that was nutrient deficient, and the food became less nourishing. And hence, the healing power of the diet diminished. And this is really, quite unfortunate. Now, if we look at the longer history, what really happened here, what about the diet leaders? What about Cushy? What about his wife? What happened? Well, Cushy's wife died of cervical cancer, and Cushy himself, I believe still alive, but he developed colon cancer for which he had surgery. So that gives you the inside skinny on the macrobiotic diet. The macrobiotic diet is a very, very precise diet, and you really do need to, I mean, if you're going to do it completely, redo your kitchen and a few other things. I never went that far as to buy the ceramic knives and the whole ball of wax. But I did get into the whole seaweed and shiitake mushrooms and umi vinegar and making the weak mineral broth, so on. It takes a lot of dedication, but the thing that now is the issue with the macrobiotic diet is that the foods are grown in the United States on fields that are contaminated with GMO products. So in other words, some of the rice is actually contaminated with GMO rice, and the nutrients are less, and so the healing power is much less. Now, that's really unfortunate because it was a pretty good diet. Now, the other issue with it is that it's a Japanese diet. Nothing against Japanese. But in Japan, they fertilize their food, or historically did fertilize their food, with human excrement. And this meant that they had a policy, just as a matter of hygiene, of cooking all of their food. So there's not a raw component to the macrobiotic diet. You can make a salad. The salad is a pressed salad that's kind of almost fermented a bit. But that's the macrobiotic diet. You're listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Blake Radio Soul channel at blakeradio.com. I'm sorry, the Rainbow Soul channel. And so please visit vitalitycapsules.com and get your free gift, my special report, which is remedies so powerful they could make antibiotics obsolete. And that's vitalitycapsules.com. As always, I welcome your calls and questions, so please call in at 914-338-0695. So the macrobiotic diet suffers from, unfortunately, the global decline in soil quality. Now, the other thing about macrobiotic is it is macrobiotic, so I don't really believe in supplements. And so on a macrobiotic diet, which is vegetarian, you're kind of stuck for getting your B12, and if you're living in a northern climate, doesn't get much sun, getting your vitamin D is a real challenge. So following this diet, especially where I was living, Syracuse, New York, you're looking at a vitamin D deficiency and a B12 deficiency. And over time, that catches up with you. And the Cushy Institute is located in Massachusetts, which is, in terms of latitude, very similar to Syracuse, New York. In other words, not much sunshine. So the next healing diet is the vegan diet. Now, this diet excludes milk and eggs. In other words, fruits, vegetables, grains are allowed. So there's no meat, no milk, and no eggs. This is a very powerful healing diet. It was one of my favorite, actually my favorite choice for my patients who had heart disease, arthritis, diabetes, Lyme, autoimmune disease, and it really works gangbusters. It's, like I said, my favorite because it works the quickest. Now, what's the pitfall? There's pitfalls to everything. Even the vegan diet is a pitfall. There's a short-term pitfall. It shows up pretty quick. When people who are vegan rely on processed food to avoid the rinsing and chopping involved in the diet, because you're talking about starting off with a bunch of vegetables and grains in front of you. So you're talking about washing these vegetables, patting them dry or spinning them dry, chopping them up. And I know it sounds pretty simple, but it just takes time. And also the simmering involved. For example, I had one patient who came to me because she ached all over her body, and she was late 50s, and she had decided this was definitely due to the change of life. And it just got to the point she just couldn't do anything. And I think her other doctor did have her on hormone replacement, but it just wasn't doing a trick for her. So she came to see me, and I ultimately put her on a vegetarian diet, and everything cleared up, and oh my gosh, she's so happy, and I was a big hero, and I was feeling very proud of myself until a month later she called me and said, "Doctor, I'm following that diet, and all my aches and pains are back." I'm like, "Really?" I said, "It can't be." I said, "Well, come on in the office, and we'll sort this out." So she came in the office, and sure enough, she had all of her aches and pains with her. So we went over her diet, went over every last thing. The only thing she changed was she had switched to using canned beans instead of soaking and boiling her beans. So you know what? Get rid of those canned beans and start soaking and boiling your beans again, which she did, and her pain promptly went away. So the big pitfall in a vegan diet is because it can be labor-intensive, there's a real temptation to rely on processed foods, such as canned beans, bottled sauces, and that will definitely reduce your health benefits tremendously. If you have a serious situation like, say, hypertension, you're just not going to get very far with the bottled canned stuff. And I'll give you an example of my direct experience. When I was in medical practice, because I tell people, look, you got to be vegetarian, stop eating this, stop eating that, I would send them to the Vegetarian Society. So in order to send them to the Vegetarian Society, I would make donations, so a few hundred dollars here, a few hundred dollars there. And I tell my patients, now go to the Vegetarian Society, and they'll hook you up and they'll, you know, show you the ropes. And as a fundraiser, every other month or so, the Vegetarian Society would hold a vegan brunch. And, of course, the way they did the vegan brunch is they would approach all the different vegan food manufacturers or suppliers who would make donations of basically prepared / packaged foods. And then, I would volunteer and make a financial donation and volunteer to dish out the food and stuff. Well, invariably, the day after this brunch, I was really sick. I felt absolutely lousy. So one year I said to the director, he's actually now, he's famous in the United States, he's really gone far with the vegan movement. I said, I feel really sick after yesterday. I think that food we're feeding these people is not very healthy. He said, look, that's who donates the food, and that's that, and financially is what we have to do to make ends meet, so that's the end of it. I was just shocked that, here we are, vegetarian food movement, and what is being protested, of course, is that, big agribusiness is poisoning our foods for profit, and then here we are, a vegan group, trying to help people eat vegetarian for better health. Well, actually, he wanted to save the animals, but I was trying to get them better health, and our excuse is we're going to make our recruits sick because, it's going to give more profits, or not more profits, but make the whole brunch a more profitable venture and help fund the society. So I really felt very badly about that, and I realized just how profoundly awful the fake meats and the white flour products and the tofu-y cuties and soy products were. And that inspired me to absolutely ban them from my house. Now, long-term, the vegan diet, even if you get it right, when I say get it right, I mean you don't rely on the processed foods. Long-term, you're at risk of getting osteoporosis, weakness, tiredness. And this takes years and years to come on. I'm talking 5 to 15 years. So if you decide to be vegan, you get plenty of time to tweak and adjust things. And this is overcome by taking gelatin supplements with boron or by eating animal broth. Of course, these are both animal products. But that solves the long-term problem with the vegan diet. Now, then you have the raw food diet. Now, this is a miracle diet if ever there was one. This diet is the one that, in terms of people saying, oh, my God, it's cured my cancer, this is the one that gets the biggest thumbs up. However, generally, you're talking about a juicing regimen. In other words, picking the raw vegetables, fruits, and juicing them. But the effect on the bones is even more severe than in the vegan diet. Why? Well, for a couple of reasons. First, poor absorption, because there is no simmering or steaming going on. I won't say steaming, but simmering going on to separate the minerals and nutrients from the fiber and get them in a state where they're highly absorbed. And so there's a tendency over time to have this deficiency in terms of the bone development. Now, the other thing is the decreased nutritional value of foods due to soil conditions. That's a universal issue. And so the really only remedy for that is using animal fertilizer. However, that's been contaminated now because of the different organisms in the animal waste as well as the chemicals in the animal waste. So now it's getting really difficult to produce enough high-quality raw food for a raw food diet. Now, the other issue is that a lot of raw food is not raw. Oh, well, how about that? So, in other words, the big issue or the big benefit of eating raw is you're eating this food filled with these living nutrients and enzymes, and it just really transfers that energy, boing, right into your body and just vitalizes you. Well, now what's happened in the past 5 years in the United States especially is that all of the herbs are steam distilled. This means that if you go to the store and you buy dried oregano, or let's say you're, you know, a real foodie type and you buy a pound of dill weed, because you use a lot of it, all these things are cooked. And so many raw food products rely on herbs that are dried. And whether it's herb powder or whatever, the law is it has to be steam distilled. And then it's dried, and then it's sold as raw. Well, I don't say sold as raw, but people presume it's raw because, 20 years ago, these herbs were raw. They were just kind of dried. They weren't steam distilled. So what's happened then is nutritional content, or power of these things, is phenomenally reduced. And this is something that's kind of going under the radar, but it makes the raw food diet very weak because, well, first of all, it's not raw. And then the other issue is the high fiber present interferes with the absorption of a lot of nutrients. And, of course, the issue I mentioned before is that a lot of the raw stuff is just not raw. For example, cashews are not raw. If I live in the tropics and actually grow cashews, I'm so excited. Oh, gosh, you know, I want a raw cashew. Everyone says, oh, my God, no way. Really? Why not? Well, it turns out that cashews actually produce a poisonous liquid material in the nut. And you have to either boil the nut or roast the nut, but it has to be cooked. Otherwise, it's poisonous to humans. So cashews, you know, you go to the store, any health food store, and say, well, do you want the raw cashews or the roasted cashews? Well, that's like a non-choice. The raw cashews have already been cooked. Maybe they've been boiled instead of roasted, so you have a different flavor going on, but they're not, they're absolutely not raw. Almonds, no longer raw, they're sterilized now. Tofu, the recipe for tofu requires 10 minutes of boiling. Fake milks and cartons, again, you're talking about things that have to be sterilized. Bottled, they now call it lightly pasteurized vegetarian juices. And this is like you can buy carrot juice in a bottle and all kinds of really neat juices, and they're lightly pasteurized. Well, lightly pasteurized is still cooked. So all these things are basically sterilized or have incredible heat applied, and they are not raw. And so you have people following a raw food diet, and as much as a third to half of their food just isn't raw. So no wonder, you know, they're not getting maybe the healing power that a raw diet used to deliver. Now, the other issue is the dehydrator. Oh, my God, the dehydrator. There's a nemesis there. The dehydrator is a machine that removes moisture through a fan mechanism with not very much heat, usually below 100 degrees. The issue with this, though, is when you make these raw crackers, which I used to make, and I did this myself, using this device, you suck all the water out of them. And then when you eat this raw cracker, the raw cracker, when it gets into your body, your body says, well, that cracker's pretty dry. So it literally sucks water out of your circulation and dehydrates you as you eat it. Not a healthy thing at all. So, in other words, making raw pizza, for example, is not much better than a cooked pizza. Maybe you use a pureed nut crust instead of a flour crust, but that crust is extremely dry, extremely dehydrating, and it's really a stress to your system. The other issue with the raw food diet is a lot of times people will eat a lot of nuts in order to get calories and get more fats, and these nuts can cause an imbalance in the purines and the pyrimidines in the body and cause either an outbreak of herpes or a gout attack. And also too much use of oil. So oil is a lot of times poured into many of these raw recipes. And so sounds like a lot of issues, but believe it or not, you can bypass these issues. And simply by relying on vegetables and sprouted seeds and grains. So you have to really focus on raw produce and on seeds and grains that you actually sprout. And then using chia and flax seed as your fat sources. You can soak those overnight. They're well hydrated. They won't dehydrate you. And then that really mitigates most of the issues with the raw food diet. Now, there's two more issues. One is the severe munchies. I was raw for about 6 months. It got to the point where I was eating continuously. I couldn't get any work done because my hands were always grabbing food and putting it in my mouth. So that's a problem. Now, what do munchies mean? Whenever you get the munchies, really severe munchies, that suggests that you have a mineral deficiency. And you have to stop and you have to address that mineral deficiency. So we have a question. Let me see what... Let's answer this question. I'm clicking this button here. Something's supposed to happen. I'm clicking again. Hey, 8273, you're on the air.
Oh, hi.
Yeah.
Hi, Dr. Danielle. I'm so sorry. I thought I was on queue. I don't mean to interrupt your...
Oh, okay. No problem.
Should I wait until the end before I ask
your
question?
Oh, no, if you have a question, I can answer it now.
Oh, okay. Thank you so much. And I can apologize. I thought maybe I was just on queue. I just recently found you, and I really love you. I really enjoy and believe in what you're teaching.
Thank you.
I have a question. My husband, he has high blood pressure, and he, unfortunately, we got convinced into taking medication. I think it's Bistolic. I think that's what he's taking. And he would sometimes take it a few months, and then we would try to get him out of it. And recently, he's tried to stop suddenly, and I think he feels really sick, so he decides to go back on. And in addition to that, I'm also trying my best to give him a lot of a vegan food, and I do a lot of juicing for him. And just need your assistance and guidance in terms of how to safely wean him off the medication and then kind of help him up with his high blood pressure. Because right now, it's still kind of high even with the medication. And with the, and I, you're right, it's a lot of work, doing a lot of salad and juicing, which I don't mind. But sometimes he's also like the discipline, I guess, because he also eats a lot of regular food. So that's why it's a lot of, you know, temptation. So I was trying to get advice on how to safely wean him off the medication and help him out with his hyperpressure naturally.
Oh, okay. All right. I'm just going to silence, put you on mute here, and I'll go ahead and answer your question.
I'm sorry?
I'm going to go ahead and answer your question.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. Well, that's a great question. And it points up the challenge of transitioning from what you're eating to healthy and then coordinating that transition with medication. I have to say here as a disclaimer, this is not medical advice. They didn't teach any of this stuff in medical school. Can you believe that? Not a bit of it. So this is not intended to cure, diagnose, or treat any disease. So having said that, with hypertension is very, very sensitive to dairy. And if you can cut that down to zero, that would be great. But the reality of a male who has hypertension, who's trying to deal with it without drugs, is that a lot of guys like heavier foods. So the first thing to do is to work on the dietary changes until the blood pressure is normalized, even with the medications. And that would be the point at which that you would cut back on the medications. And you can go to my website and click on the tab for discovery sessions and fill out an application there, and you can apply for direct one-on-one kind of guidance where I just hold your hand and kind of walk you through it. But the number one thing to do is to work on the natural stuff first and then taper off the medicines. A lot of blood pressure medicines actually have negative interactions with certain herbs, so you have to watch out for that or work with someone who's knowledgeable about that and can say, hey, you know what, if you're taking this particular drug, can't take those herbs. Or, you know what, if you're taking this dose of that drug, you can take this dose of these herbs, and that's pretty much a swap out where you can just transition over from one to the other. But one tip for people who have high blood pressure is to understand that the main thing going on is the reason your blood pressure is high is just not enough blood getting to your brain and your kidneys. That's as complicated as it gets. And why is the blood not getting there? There's a lot of reasons, but one big reason is your blood might be a little bit thick. Easy, quick cure is to drink more water, number one, and number two, to walk. And the walking dose is 30 minutes a day, and it's not the competitive walk. It's just one foot in front of the other, set your watch. And that redistributes the blood to the legs, feet, and gets a wider volume of distribution, thus lowering the pressure. So those are two things to do that would help while the person is still taking medications. So what we're talking about is the raw food diet. So when you get the severe munchies, it's time to address a mineral issue because your minerals are very, very, very low. And on the raw food diet, it's difficult to get minerals. Probably the best way to get minerals, if you're going to still stay raw, would be to get seaweed, soak the seaweed, and dilute the water because it's easy, it's very high in salt, and drink that water. But that would be your best bet in terms of helping stem the tide with the munchies. Now, the other issue with the raw food diet is once you go raw and you're in this continual munch, munch, munch cycle, then when you stop being raw and you eat regular food, you're still going to be in that munch habit. And so I know one lady who was slender and, you know, normal weight, actually a little bit underweight, but perfect for her. She really liked the weight when she was raw, but I took a lot of her time cooking raw. She lost all of her friends. No one wanted to eat raw with her. And so she went back to eating regular food, and she gained weight and became 300 pounds. So, very important, if you decide to transition away from raw, to pay attention to the munchies issue and to work on increasing your mineral situation so that you don't eat yourself into oblivion. Now, the other issue with the raw is there is that long-term issue with the bones. And you just got to deal with that. I have not yet found a good way to beef up the bones vegan-wise. An acceptable way, which is not perfect, but an acceptable way, is to use calcium bentonite clay, soak that with water. So in other words, mix water, bentonite clay, about 3-4 parts water, 1 part bentonite clay, let it sit for 2 days, yes, 2 days, stir it a couple times each day, and take a spoonful of that mixture at bedtime. What that's going to do is replete or replace your minerals. Now, if you don't soak it in advance, then obviously the minerals will not be loose enough or as bioavailable for you. So what diet do I finally recommend for my my patients? I generally recommend, actually I don't have patients anymore, I'm not licensed, I'm just a doctor. So what I recommended to my patients when I was practicing medicine, and I still think it's a great diet, is a vegan, whole food, wheat-free diet with meat once a week to once a month. Of course, I always recommend a vegan diet because I'm telling you, the effects are just phenomenal. But I noticed no one ever did anything I told them to do. In other words, people always ate meat. So I'd ask them, how much meat are you actually eating? And so people who ate between one serving of meat a week and one serving of meat a month had the best results. But that didn't mean they were actually able to get off their drugs and stay off their drugs. And that was really very interesting. So once people got over meat once a week, or I should say, once they told me when they were eating meat more than once a week, I noticed that the recidivance rate or the relapse rate, when I say relapse, I mean either needing their blood pressure medicines again or their aches and pains coming back, was higher. Now, another thing I noticed over time was that if people took vitamins, I guess it would be more vitamins, then they could tolerate a slightly higher dose of meat. But meat every day, apparently, it just wasn't, it's, by my observation, it was not a healing diet. It just didn't work. So you're listening to Healing with Dr. Daniels on the Rainbow Soul channel at BlakeRadio.com. And please visit VitalityCapsules.com and get your free gift, which is my special report, Remedies So Powerful, They Can Make Antibiotics Obsolete. Again, that's VitalityCapsules.com. Now, some of you may have gone there and didn't get your report, but we've fixed the site now, so it actually spits out that report automatically, and we know who you are, and we'll be sending that report out to you. Now, I want to talk to, actually, now is a good time for questions, because we have about 15 minutes left. So if people want to ask more questions, they can raise their hands. And if I don't see any hands raised, I'm going to launch into talking about healing recipes. Now, this is really a neat thing. And since we had the caller talking about hypertension, I'm going to talk about recipes. I used to write people for hypertension. So I got to a point where when I would see a new patient with hypertension, I wouldn't even reach for the drug pad. I'd reach for the prescription pad, but I'd write a recipe instead. So I'd sit down, I would say to the person, look, this is the deal. If you don't want to have hypertension and you don't want to take drugs, which I would not recommend because at the time it was pretty obvious to me that the people who were taking these blood pressure medicines were having a lot of problems, and I didn't feel like, you know, handling all the fallout of the problems from these drugs. So I said, well, so here's what you do. Take this. And this is one recipe. This is dal with amaranth. Now, dal is an Indian word for beans, basically. And, of course, it has beans in it. And yellow split peas, but you can use anything you want. Some beet stalks. Now, what's the importance of beet stalks? First of all, beets help cleanse the liver. And what the liver does, it sucks up impurities in the blood. And when it takes these impurities out of the blood, it cleans the blood, and the circulation opens up, and the blood pressure falls. Very nice. Also calls for four stalks of celery. What does celery do? Well, celery directly activates the kidneys to get the kidneys to, again, filter the blood, pee out more water, reduce total blood volume, and lower the blood pressure. Then you have onions. And what do onions do? Onions are very mild, mild, mild antibiotic. And so what they do is they inactivate or lower the activity of parasites, which can be in the blood and actually making the blood thicker. So these parasites in your blood decide they're going to hold hands and they're going to be active and reproduce maybe and do this and do that. It thickens your blood. So the carrots, I mean the onions rather, prevent that from happening. Then you have carrots in this recipe. What do carrots do? The carrots actually help repair your liver. So this basically is a kind of antioxidant repairing mechanism. And then it calls for turmeric. And turmeric, of course, is an incredible aid to the circulation and to the liver. And again, it kills parasites as well. So parasites are like, oh man, we do not want to hang around here. We are leaving. And a lot of what causes people to have a sudden vasospasm with the blood vessel just kind of cracked down and you get your heart attack is actually parasites at work. And so turmeric solves that issue. And then you have cumin seeds. And cumin seeds are a great digestive aid. And then there's mustard seeds in this recipe. And the mustard seeds act as an irritant, again, for the parasites. Makes them decide, oh, man, we don't want to stay around. We got to get out of here. And then, of course, distilled water. Distilled water, the significance of that is that the water is purified. And it's not tap water. Tap water is not a health food, okay? So you need to have your tap water somehow purified. So you don't want fluoride, you don't want chlorine, none of this stuff. You just want water. And then a teaspoon of kelp powder. What does the kelp powder do? The kelp powder releases minerals into the dish and increases the whole mineral content and increases your healing. And this recipe is just amaranth with dal, and it's in one of my cookbooks. And this is the one that I would recommend for people to help them with their aches and pains and with their blood pressure. And of course, the next piece of the recipe tells you to add your amaranth and your water and boil it, and it gets done. And that works out. Now, here's another type of recipe. This recipe is called, the recipes are all rated. This is an R. It means it's restricted. Why is it restricted? It's restricted because it's got a lot of stuff in it. It's not perfectly healthy, but it's healthier than what it replaces. So porkless beans is obviously pork and beans. And I should say it's replacing pork and beans. So it's not baked, but it just tastes like it is. And, of course, there's no pork in the recipe. It just tastes like it. And it's very high in protein, high-calorie dish, and it really stands in for that meat main dish piece for someone who's trying to switch over to a healthier diet but just really hasn't been satisfied by that vegetarian stuff, as my husband would say. So this is a transition dish to satisfy cravings for meats and heavy foods. And let's see what's in here. So there's 6 bay leaves. And bay leaves are, again, powerful aid to disinfectant. It helps the breathing, and it helps the intestines. And 5 cups of dry navy beans. Now, this is interesting. If you use lighter-colored beans, which is what navy beans are, these white beans, they aid digestion more and help moderate things like blood sugar. Then blackstrap molasses is in there. Blackstrap molasses is the complement of white sugar. So in other words, if you take cane juice and you separate into 2 piles, the one pile being white sugar, all the nutrients, minerals, and things taken out of the white sugar are blackstrap molasses. And so when this molasses has less than 50 calories per tablespoon, it is so high in nutrients that it actually undoes the damage done by white sugar. And to get more technical about it, it's the white sugar damaging the blood vessels that causes the body to need to produce cholesterol to patch the damage done by the white sugar. So what happens then, if you have blackstrap molasses in your diet, these blood vessels get repaired directly with the blackstrap molasses, and the blackstrap molasses also can neutralize the circulating sugar, so it doesn't do as much damage to you. And so that is in this dish. Then 1/2 cup of organic ketchup. couldn't get around that because, I know, if it's pork and beans, you just got to have the ketchup. I tried doing without it. It didn't work. And then 3 tablespoons of prepared hot dog mustard. Hot dog mustard happens to be very high in turmeric, which is a nice spice. And again, the mustard part is very helpful. Now, I didn't realize years and years and years ago is that hot dog mustard actually has white flour in it. That's what gives it this nice little spreadable texture. Nevertheless, it's a step up. And, of course, 1 teaspoon dry mustard, and then a handful of dried shiitake mushrooms. Shiitake mushrooms are very interesting. The way shiitake mushrooms work is you have a cap to the mushroom, and the bottom of the cap is curled under. If the bottom of the cap is curled under, then the spores are still in the mushroom, and it's the spores that boost the immune system and reverse disease. And in this particular recipe, the shiitake mushrooms give you the chewable texture, kind of like meat. And they also, of course, are high in protein as well. But they boost the immune system, at the same time giving them meaty texture and flavor. And then, of course, liquid smoke, which gives you a kind of smoky, porky type flavor, and some salt and some distilled water. And, of course, there's instructions, you know, mix this, mix that, bake this, not bake this, but boil this, boil that. It actually tastes a lot like pork and beans. I have taken this dish to potlucks, and people have said, wow, Dr. Daniels, that tastes good. So let me answer another question here. I have these buttons here I have to press. I'm going to see if we can get them to do right. Let me press that again. All right, 6674, you're on the air.
Hi, my name is Jason. Thank you so much for all this great information.
Oh, you're welcome.
And I guess you have recipe books available on your website, yeah?
Oh, absolutely. It's Dr. Daniel's Healing Recipes. That's vitalitycapsules.com.
That's great.
And
I was wondering quickly if you could at some point talk for a minute about skin issues like eczema.
Yes, I can. I will talk about eczema.
I really would appreciate that.
Okay, no problem. We'll do that right away.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Okay, so Jason says, I must have recipes for sale. Well, golly geez, I do. Now, these are healing recipes. They're for sale on my website. And if you enter your special code, which is valued, V-A-L-U-E-D, customer, C-U-S-T-O-M-E-R, valued customer, you get $10 off. So that's really neat. Capitalize the V in valued and capitalize the C in customer. All right, eczema. Eczema. I'm telling you, when I was in medical school, it was so, so frustrating because we got all these creams. We give people these creams and more creams and more creams. Then they'd scratch themselves anyway, and the eczema would stay around. And it was just really, really frustrating. And then I got into medical practice, and I was a family practice doctor, so people with little bitty eczema might come to see me. And so I first started out, I figured out, okay, fine, we're going to tell this person not to ever use soap, so no soap, no scratching, and no hot water. Well, it turns out that soap is an irritant that can worsen your eczema and make it hang around longer. So if you have eczema, don't put soap on it. Just don't do it. That's number one. Number two, we're trained that eczema, doctors are trained, that eczema is a skin disease. It absolutely is not a skin disease. It's a disease that's visible on the skin, but it's actually a disease of the blood. So there's something circulating in the blood your body's trying to get rid of, and your body's putting it out onto the skin for a couple of reasons. One, basically, I guess the biggest reason is it can't get it out through the bottom end, which is your intestines into the toilet. So it can't seem to make that transition. Why can't it make that transition? It can't make that transition because you ingested the poison or the chemical as a liquid in a liquid form, or because the liver is not able to do the filtering job, or because you're constipated. So it's one of those three things. So it's the best way to go about getting rid of eczema is to stop the soap. And I have to say another just generalization, because of the times we live in, stop your personal care products. So if you have a lotion, a cologne, a body spray, body spritz, whatever that you're putting in that area, absolutely cease and desist. So that's number one. Number two, you have to take a look at your diet. And what you're looking for in your diet, this is very interesting, is you're looking for hidden sources of antibiotics. Because many people have antibiotic allergies, let's say penicillin, for example. And what will happen is they will have an eczema because they have food that's laced with antibiotics, very small amounts, but it's enough, not enough to throw into anaphylactic shock, but enough to give them what appears to be eczema, a little patch of itchiness. And so where do the antibiotics hide? They generally hide in the meat and the dairy products. That's one piece. The other issue is, and it's a reasonable question, by the way, to say, well, Dr. Daniels, how come everyone doesn't have eczema? That's a good question. Everyone doesn't have eczema because, one, they might not be sensitive, but more to the point, I mean, because if you have enough of this junk in your system, you're going to get eczema, but more to the point, they don't get it because they don't have a storage or deposition area in their body that the stuff is stored in. So if you have eczema or you're looking for a kind of a shortcut to get rid of it, the first thing is the diet. And again, you can get my cookbooks, Healing Recipe Cookbooks, because there's no dairy or no meat anywhere in the cookbooks. Don't do that. That's one thing. But the other thing about the diet is you have to eliminate the antibiotic sources. Because if you're putting in the chemicals your body is trying to get rid of, it won't heal the eczema. Instead, it's going to work on trying to store the new chemicals you're putting in. So you've got to get your body in a healing mode by saying, you know what, time out, we're not going to do this. So another thing for eczema is to switch all of your beverages to water only. So your eczema can be aggravated or become persistent because of things as simple as fruit drinks and bottled beverages. So you want to drink purified water. I recommend either distilled or reverse osmosis, and then add minerals to your diet someplace else to compensate for the lack of minerals in your water. That's one thing. The next thing is do enemas or get a colonic. Why? Because if you have eczema, then you have a deep-seated reservoir of these chemicals. Now, I will say if your eczema is minor, like say your eczema lesion is half an inch or less, then chances are just changing your diet is just fine. You might not even need to do an enema. I noticed my patients had small eczema, like just a little lesion here or there that was itching. No problem. Their change of diet just went away. The people who had bigger problems, like, say, a whole arm and a leg or all their back or just a large area covered, they would need to do enemas to get more relief or get better relief or to get a colonic. And that actually brings up a question someone asked the author. I told him I would answer it on air, which is, what about colonics? Are they good? Are they bad? Who should get them? Whatever. Well, we have 3 minutes left, and I'll answer the question in those 3 minutes. Colonics are not for everybody. What a colonic does is you go to an expert, and they empty all the waste from your whole colon. This is good for many people because they haven't had the waste emptied in a while, but it's bad because the first half of your colon is where your body reabsorbs enzymes and nutrients used in digestion so they can be recycled. Excuse me. So if you empty the whole colon and you do it frequently, then obviously you're going to deplete these enzymes, digestive enzymes and nutrients that your body had planned to recycle. And so that is a problem. So colonics, yes, they do work. You should get them either frequently, like twice a week until your problem is resolved, or just get them once a week. Or most people find, I know the colonics people are getting mad at me, that a colonic once or twice a year is really just fine. That is, if you do other things like work on your diet and drink water and stuff like that. We have one more question. I think we're going to have time for this one last question. Okay, 4026, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
Dr. Daniels?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you for answering. I have a question. My daughter, she has done everything for, like, she's using, she eats raw, she's vegetarian, she has read many, many books, the China study, every possible thing she has done because she has, like, acne in her skin, in her face.
Acne?
Yes, acne.
Uh-huh.
And And yeah, she has done, right now she's seeing acupuncturist, and she said that all the problem is in her liver.
Yep.
But still, she does enemas. She's so well, but now we don't know what to do. Really,
so it's not helping.
Nothing.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
She did two weeks of just juicing, mm-hmm. and I was cleaning her face every day and think, but no, the breakouts always are there. Like special spots in the cheeks are always there, having some big pimples.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't know what is wrong or what to do.
All right, if we take a look at the diet you told me she's following, it's actually, well, a couple of things. One, it's a high-sugar diet.
Mm-hmm.
So that's difficult. So that would need to be somehow addressed. So usually a raw diet does very well in clearing the face. But in her case, you say she is raw and has not helped. Is that right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. So if she's raw and has not helped, then there's an issue usually with dried fruit, oil, nuts. Those are the two areas that will give you skin challenges. The problem with the raw food diet is a lot of people go on what we call high-end raw. It's a raw food diet that has a lot of the gourmet stuff in there. It's very things are very very tasty and savory and stuff, but the raw food diet can be dehydrating, but that would be the issue. It might be that she needs to switch from that for a bit and get her face cleared up, or it might be that just tweaking the raw food diet would do the case. I need to know more about exactly what she's eating to tell you. But I think if you take a look and see if she's eating dried fruit, like say figs, or oils, even if it is olive oil, or nuts, even if they are macadamia, all these things can diminish the complexion. Also, I have a book, Do You Have the Guts to Be Beautiful, which is a wonderful book, which tells people how to get rid of blemishes and wrinkles. And people have actually told me that it's really done wonders for their acne.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that book's at my site, vitalitycapsules.com.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, well, we are at the end of our hour. This has really been a great hour. I didn't get to cover absolutely everything, but do stop by vitalitycapsules.com, get your free report, and, of course, you can pick up your set of Dr. Daniel's 4 cookbooks with healing recipes that my patients actually use to heal. So we'll see you again, same time, next week. Thank you very much.